Hi, my name is Meredith Cook. I'm a PhD student at the University of Washington, and I'll be talking about flu vaccination promotion practices among large employers. I have no personal financial relationships to disclose. So flu vaccination rates among working age adults are quite low. They're only about 40% in adults between 18 and 64, and that's compared to about 65% in older adults. And that's despite the CDC recommendation of flu vaccination for all adults. So those low vaccination rates have important consequences for population health and also for healthcare costs. But employers can do something about that by offering vaccinations to employees at the work site. And that they can also use particular strategies to encourage employees to take advantage of vaccinations once they make them available. There are some these particular evidence-based strategies. Employers' use of those is not really known. So our group did a literature review, including reviewing the community guide, and we found four basic categories of these evidence-based practices that employers can use to increase flu vaccination rates among their employees. And those categories are financial access, so making vaccinations free or reducing the cost for employees; physical access, so basically making vaccination as easy and convenient for employees as possible; communication, so just sharing information with employees about the vaccination; and then rules and norms. So to give you a little bit of context for our work, this is being conducted at the University of Washington Health Promotion Research Center. That's one of the CDC Prevention Research Centers. And we've done some qualitative, formative research in this area, both interviews with vendors, so those are the people that actually come out to the workplace and do the vaccination, and then also with large employers. And basically what we found is that among those employers that do already offer vaccination, they're not doing a lot to actively promote it. So they're making it available, they're offering it, but then they're not going beyond that to actually encourage employees to take advantage of it. So the primary aim for the study that I'll be talking about today is to estimate the prevalence of employers' use of these evidence-based flu vaccination promotion practices. And we did this using a national quantitative survey of large employers. So our inclusion criteria were that, first of all, employers had to be large size, which we defined as at least 500 employees. And they had to have a headquarters in the United States. And our respondents were representatives of each company who knew the most about benefits or vaccination. So often it was an HR person, occupational health nurse, a benefits person. Our data source was from a large survey marketing database. It had about 18,000 entries, so it was representative of all large employers in the U.S. by industry, geography, and size. So we did the survey by phone. We used a call center, survey marketing call center, to do make the calls. It was 10 or 15 minutes long. We conducted it last winter, and it referred back to employers' practices the previous fall flu season in 2011. We made up to 30 attempts to contact each respondent before we considered them a non-responder. And we did a couple things to maximize response rate. So this is a group that's notoriously difficult to get to respond to a survey, large employers. So first of all, we cleaned our contact information. So we did a sort of a pre-screening to confirm that the person on our contact list was the one that we should be talking to at each employer, and also verify that we had the right phone information for them. And then second, we actually did a training at the call center. So we're out in Seattle, and the call center was in Philadelphia. So some from our research team actually flew out there and did this in-person training with the call center. So they're used to doing different types of more marketing research, and so we really wanted them to understand like why response rate was so important for this type of survey. So this is our response rate data. So we needed a total of 376 employers for the statistical analysis. So then backing up a couple steps in order to account for non-response and the fact that not everyone in our survey would be someone that offers vaccination, we had to start with over 1,200 employers. And then it turned out that 140 of those weren't eligible based on the inclusion criteria. 382 refused. We couldn't reach 163 of them, and that left us with this final sample of 583, which gave us a response rate of 52%, which that's excluding the ineligible. Might sound a little bit low based on a general context, but for large employers, actually, we felt pretty good about that. So these are the characteristics of our final sample. So employers had an average of over 6,000 employees. And just under 60 work sites. The average age was about 40, and almost 80% of their employees were employed full-time. The annual salary was about $46,000, and 63% were self-insured. So now I'll talk a little bit about our results in terms of physical and financial access. So you can see here the bright green bar is the percent that offered flu shots for free. So that's about 70% of our sample. And then the remaining 30% is pretty evenly divided between those employers that did offer flu shots, but with a cost, and those that didn't offer flu shots. So it's about 14-15% each for those. And then there was a small fraction that stated that they didn't know whether or not they offered flu shots. So among just those employers that did offer flu shots, many of them had multiple sites. So we asked them what proportion of your sites are flu shots available, and that was about 63% of their sites on average, so a little over half. And then similarly, we asked them across their entire employee population what proportion of your employees would have access, and that was about 76% of the employees worked at sites where the flu shots were available. So now I'll go on to continue with physical and financial access, and also talk a little bit about rules and norms. Many of the employers, about 73%, reported having workers that worked only on the evenings or weekends. So we asked those employers whether or not they had flu shots available at those times, and about 68% of them did. And then also, in terms of physical access, 76% of the employers reported having a vaccination event that lasted more than a single day, which increases people's access if they're not there on the one single day of a vaccination event. In terms of financial access, almost all the employers, 97%, reported that they offered vaccinations on the clock, meaning that employees could get vaccinated while they were being paid. And 25% reported offering some type of incentive to employees in exchange for vaccination. And then in terms of rules and norms, 40% said that they encouraged managers to get vaccinated to set an example for other employees. And about 14% said that they required vaccination for employees. Now I'll talk a little bit about the communication strategies. So these are the ways that the employers could share information with employees about vaccination. So some of the least commonly used strategies we found were postcards, sending mail home, other methods that the employers could specify, using a flyer in a payroll, probably because not that many people get a paper paycheck these days. In the more intermediate range were in-person meetings or having a newsletter article. And then sort of in the 75% range, bulletin board posting, a website or intranet, or posters. And then very commonly used were emails, about 95% of employers. And almost everyone, 99%, said they use at least one of those strategies to communicate with employees. And we also asked the employers about the messages that they included. So using those communication strategies, what did they actually share with employees? What did they tell them about vaccination? So 52% said that they reported that the management encouraged vaccination. and 66% to sort of upper 70s included the messages that it won't make you sick, that it's effective so that it works, that even healthy people need the flu shot, that you can get vaccinated on the clock, and that there are particular health gains or benefits associated with the flu shot. And then almost all of them, 97%, included the message that either the flu shot is free or if there was a cost, what that cost was. So there are a couple limitations I should mention. One is a concern about non-response bias. So it's possible that our respondents were those that already had a particular interest in vaccination and may have had more interest in using the particular promotion practices that we asked them about. Another concern is about the intensity of strategies. So we have limited knowledge about that. So we asked them whether or not they used posters or sent out an email, but we don't know how many posters they might have used, where they put them up, who sent an email, was it the HR person or the company president? And obviously things like that can have an impact on the effectiveness of the strategies. And then finally, we only included large employers, and we know a lot of people work for small or mid-sized employers, and so our results are really only generalizable to those larger employers. So what we found, in contrast to our earlier findings, was that actually many promotion strategies are quite well used by large employers. There's some room for improvement, especially in the physical access piece, but not as much as we had thought that there would be. So those employers that are not offering flu vaccination or not offering it for free are a minority, for sure. That said, large employers employ a lot of people, and so their practices affect a lot of people. So it's still important to continue dissemination efforts. So in conclusion, like I said, the next steps are to continue to focus on using those access-based strategies, targeting those employers and the types of employers that are not using the evidence-based strategies right now. And then, you know, that said, given that we have these evidence-based strategies, things we know work to increase vaccination rates, and yet we still have pretty low vaccination rates, we may need to think about developing some new, more innovative strategies to help increase vaccination rates in this population.
Let me thank the panel for their timely presentations, and we do have time at the end for question and answers. Would the entire panel please come sit at the front table? Yes.
Employer has to pay. what's the second question I just said?
Third
individual, correct.
And how do you think that would impact another story when you adopt that program? And that doesn't only apply to work.
Okay. Well, as for me, other employers would also be interested in having healthier employees and having lower premiums. So that's why, regardless of how big the employer, they would also hopefully be interested in the wellness and well-being of their employees.
Well, for my program, Blue Shots are fairly expensive in the range of $25 to $30 each, including the administration. So we think it's kind of a no-brainer. It's pretty cost-effective and community cost-saving. And a lot of these strategies that we talked about are fairly low investment for employers in terms of putting up posters, sending emails, a lot of those things.
So I'll just address the fruit and veggie program. So it was a 14-week program, and for the about 360 employees, these were fruits and vegetables delivered twice weekly to the worksite. It was $2,600. Now, that might be different in Philadelphia than in North Dakota, but we found it to be very low cost, and we found long-term gains. So we're not even suggesting that employers would have to provide this year-round. You know, just sort of jump-starting people's knowledge and understanding of fruits and vegetables. You know, we provided a little bit of educational information at the site in which they picked up their fruits and vegetables. It was part of a comprehensive program, though, and so that meant that they were also getting messages about the importance of improving healthy nutrition. But in terms of just having this one single thing delivered to the work sites, the employees that carried on this after the program, they were contributing their denim day. So when they could wear jeans, they would give a dollar, and they were using that fund to fund fruit and veggies. So we think it's very sustainable.
For my program, it was quite simple. Hospitals had to purchase their own food vaccine to get to their employees, but we created all the posters and education materials to provide to them. And we really partnered with pharmaceutical companies too, who could provide breakfast or lunch at the regional training that we were offering, because that's always a good way to get folks out there with money.
Our program was designed to be low cost, specifically so that it could be sustainable at the work site. The participant manual was a cost of about $10 per participant. Posters were very inexpensive. The time of occupational health nurses and peer health coaches, because they didn't have a percentage of their time dedicated, can't really be calculated specifically. But I think, there's an exchange for being low cost in terms of intensity and how that affects the program outcome.
Yeah.
For the state of Pennsylvania, coming from the state of New York, where the mandatory flu vaccination law was passed and then extended due to difficulties with getting folks to comply in New York, or the way the law was passed, is there a reason why there wasn't a preemptive reach out to the union that other folks might be affected in the process of the development? Which I think everyone agrees with, it's just a matter of how the region is promulgated. And you say that has been one of the barriers to acceptance. So is there a reason why it wasn't done up front?
So we didn't pass a law. No, we left it up to institutional mandates, because our hospital association is still not pursuing any. They prefer the state not pursuing kind of state law. So our whole campaign was to work with the individual hospital systems to do their own institutional mandate. So that's why we didn't do any kind of pre-work with the unions. We weren't really sure what each individual hospital was going to come up against.
Education, a lot of people don't go to school. So
So her question was, what sorts of things did we do? How were they delivered? Was it at the cafeteria or some other setting? And what kinds of educational things that we did, and that may influence this generalizability to the home environment. So it wasn't through the cafeteria. There was a cafeteria in this large state capitol setting. But what we did was we partnered with a local grocery store who, on the 2 days that the fruits and veggies were delivered, he brought those to the loading zone, essentially, of the capitol, and then representatives from each of the 4 work sites would go down and get their portion of the fruits and vegetables, whatever that particular day would be, whether it was blackberries or bananas or cherry tomatoes. You know, it would be a different fruit and vegetable each time. There were some repeats, but we tried to expose people to as many different kinds of fruits and vegetables as possible. There were usually, in all cases, not repeats always, but little bits of educational information. So like a poster that would be sitting in the break room, which is where typically the fruits and vegetables would be, and employees would just take them as they chose. And it would have information about nutritional content, about some of the health benefits and outcomes that we knew about for that particular food. And, you know, the generalizability part, I think you're absolutely right. You know, having something to maybe take home would be a good idea. Again, we found it very interesting that women were sort of at least telling us that they were transmitting this information to their husbands, and that's because they're typically preparing the foods and making those decisions. And so for men, clearly, I think that we have to think about how can we get them to influence their partners at home, and so perhaps having either that person be part of it or getting information, you know, to their partners may be important as well. I'll just echo that, and there's a pretty good set of best practices that have been developed that are out there about how do you start, with a lot of resources, a lot of tools, and obviously management support is the number one kind of factor. But in our work, what we found that was very important, and this has been at both state work sites and private work sites, is establishing a health council. And so you've got a fairly good representation of the different employees that are there. And so those employees then are your contacts and your champions, and obviously, again, management and making that case, as the other speaker said.
We've got time for one more question. Any others? Yes.
Hello, my name is Mark Lesko from the Lovell Federal Healthcare Center in North Chicago, Illinois, Occupational Health. Regarding the flu vaccine, we're looking at possibly passing a policy for mandatory declination. We can't get mandatory vaccination through the union, but I'm wondering if any of the panel members are familiar with hospitals that have had mandatory declination for influenza vaccine, kind of along the lines of the Hep B vaccine and OSHA requirements, and if so, whether that has worked.
I do know that some of our hospitals have implemented, if they don't have the institutional mandate to get the vaccine, they have instead gone reverse and done the mandated that they have to sign the client and know all of the I think it has increased, and they have to sign it annually. It's not just like a once and done. So I think that does increase, and it's just a little bit scary when you have to sign something and say, oh, wow, this could happen to me. Okay, I'll look to change your money. So I know we have some data. I don't have it off the top of my head, but if you want to get my card, I can get you some data on what we do have in our state.
There's an interesting case study in Canada. It was about 10, 12 years ago when they had the SARS pandemic. And what they found is kind of intriguing in that there was very high vaccination rates of the healthcare professionals. The problem was their family wasn't vaccinated. So when their families got sick, they stayed home, and you still had the shortage that you were trying to avoid in the first place. So I think vaccination is part of it for the healthcare worker, but I think we need to look beyond that and maybe look at innovative ways that we can keep them on the job. And again, that was kind of an extreme example. Thank you for your attention. We're out of time, but I'm sure they'll be happy to talk with you afterwards. Please join me in thanking the panel one last time.